I learned all of that just to survive. So the best way for me to survive is to be able to control the conversation. And the only way I can control the conversation to know more about you than you probably know about yourself. So that sounds very big ego, but it's the only way I could survive 10 through 12. There's no other way. So as a marketer, I had the very same thing. Doesn't mean I'm the best marketer on the block. It does not mean I'm volatile. It just means I'm able to do unique things with marketing.
Okay, Navigators, here is part two of my conversation with Doug Lawson. Again, I cannot tell you how much I enjoyed speaking with Doug, and I so appreciate all of the topics that we got into in part two and how they relate to accessibility and Doug's experience, and of course, marketing. So with that, we will pick up right where we left off in yesterday's episode. Hope you enjoy.
If you don't mind me saying,
yeah, please.
Look about email sequence. Say you want to write a LinkedIn post for yourself. What most people do is they tell AI, hey, write in my voice. AI does not. I would highly encourage you to interview yourself. You'll say whatever tool you prefer and get transcripts of the way you speak and feed it into AI. And AI will multiply the way you speak. So it'll start writing the way you talk. It'll start using unique language so that when you upload it to LinkedIn, nobody's going to know that it was AI because you're going to read like a human being. You have to tell it not to sound AI. You have to literally tell it. Live in the weird turns of phrases that I use. Don't overcorrect. And so, so that's what I said. The human
I love that
is the most important piece in my world. How to make great, compelling content.
Absolutely. What an amazing tip to interview yourself. I think that's a great, great way to get started and kind of remove yourself a little bit from the process and let the AI do the work with things that you have said. And it's actually one of the reasons why I love creating my podcast so much. And I think I kind of stumbled into it being such a great pillar form of content. Of course, you can repurpose a podcast transcript in so many different ways, but you can also feed all of those transcripts and now we're able to actually feed the audio files and the YouTube URLs and all of this stuff directly into AI. They have my voice, literally my voice, but also my intonation, my personality, all of that stuff. And so starting, if you can, even if it's just it's 5-minute podcast a day, which is what I started doing, it's so much better at training AI than the aggregation of all of the data out there on the internet right now, trying to craft a voice for you. One quick question before we get into the next phase here about your content strategy and the Doug Lawson approach in particular. One, and I think we're going to go into a little bit of your philosophy on finding a niche and niching down a little bit. In one of your more recent, the LinkedIn post that I really loved is said, my content is not designed to go viral. It's designed to be discovered by the exact 50 decision makers I want to work with this year. So can you elaborate a little bit on what you meant by that, on the idea that, no, don't make content to go viral, make it to be read by that exact one person. And I think, I think I get the message there, but can you talk a little bit about that?
No, I think from that piece of content that you represent, my main point about that, before I said that, was that this generation, I don't mean age, I mean this hour in time is trained by algorithms. So your grandma's trained by the Facebook algorithm. You're trained by TikTok. Yep. I'm trained by whatever algorithm I'm on. So typically the people you see in your feed are those who write for the algorithm. So they're content creators. They're great for that platform. They're really great at attracting attention. And so all algorithms love attention. So they'll reward whoever can command the most amount of attention. So give it traffic. They'll just send people your way. The problem is that type of content is not great for B2B content. B2B content has very little to do with B2C. B2C is very broad. It's like a funnel, right? It's almost all top funnel. It's almost all about getting you to feel emotional. That's why it's very emotional stories. There's rags to riches stories. There's substance abuse stories. There's trolling. There's all kinds of ways to grab your attention. And most of my clients don't have a rags to riches story. Most of them are normal people doing very normal things. They're working boring protocols. You're going to be very hard pressed to get them to write performative content that goes viral. So they get frustrated with that because they're looking at the feed. They're like, I'm not going to write like that. I'm not going to talk about the time my dog was killed. So I can sell, you know, accounting services. So a lot of clients and prospects complain about that all the time. And it's always the same. You do not need to talk to a million people. You need 50 people who are the right ICP, who are in the right part of the buyer journey, who are ready to invest in services soon. That's all you need, because in B2B, we don't need hundreds of contracts. So my most recent client is a sales consultant. She makes $30,000 per audit. So she sells audits for mid-market company. She only needs 2 or 3 per quarter to hire her. So she essentially needs about 5 sales calls to 10 sales calls a quarter. So it's not B2C, not content. Mm-hmm. It's very strategic. And it's a way for me to capture people who actually have money. People who have money don't really want to spend a whole lot of time making B2C content. They want to make content that speaks to the right people with the right eyeball, the right bank accounts. And they could care less about fame. They could care less about going viral. They're actually relieved. They don't have to talk about what type of antidepressants they're on or the day they overcame alcoholism. They just want to talk about problems and solutions. And yes, you can't. You just also have to understand that if you're going to go that route, you are not going to get people clapping in the comments. You are not going to get people asking you for time to pick your brain. You are only, that piece of content is only going to be seen by other people who are way too busy to hang out on LinkedIn all day, like those of us. So that's what I meant. So I said, shift away from B2C type of content and focus on B2B content. One more thing, just because you write B2B doesn't mean it's boring. It just means it's not meant for mass appeal. It's meant for a very niche audience who understands what you're talking about. I would understand those problems.
Absolutely. Oh, I love that so much. And couldn't agree more. It's so hard to rewire the way that we've all been programmed by those algorithms, like you say. Man, if I'm only getting 50 impressions to 100 impressions on my post, it's nothing. But it's like, what if those are 100 decision makers, you know, then those are good numbers. So I love that thought so much.
Let's talk about 100 impressions, right? I would prefer you get a little bit more impressions than that. But let's just say 100 impressions. Let's say we wrote the content exactly the way it needed to be written. Maybe 80% of that 100, which is 80 people, are somewhat your decision makers. Of 80, let's say 20 are your decision makers. So we're already meeting the goal with 100 impressions. Although that's not how algorithms work, but for the sake of the argument, 100 impressions, we don't need all 100. We need maybe half of that to be somewhat of our bullseye ICP reading. So it's quite powerful when you reframe it in that way. But to be honest, 100 impressions, I would say half of that in reality, your friends, your family, and acquaintances. So that doesn't technically work. But the mental exercise to help you understand.
Right.
A low impression really doesn't mean anything. Oh, that pool is exactly the people we want to talk to.
I'd like to get into a little bit of the accessibility and inclusiveness side of things now. And I'm sure you get asked this question a lot. As a deaf person, how has your experience with that kind of shaped the way you approach marketing and the way you approach your content and your communication?
Oh, I think I wrote a post about this a couple of weeks ago. And
I remember that, yep.
I don't know if you read it. I don't expect you to read everything. But I said that, hey, a lot of people ask me, how do you lip read? Because art came up when I go out in public.
That's right.
Lip reading 100% of the time. And I said, you know, I gave up. It's a post. So I said, lip reading is a guessing game. So you get a sentence, remove a bunch of words from the sentence you're left with. Only words that you saw, right? In order to fill in the blanks, you have to understand context. You have to understand human context, human behavior, right. Human dynamics. And it's helped me a lot because in order for me to understand people, I have to understand how you behave and what your intent is. And I think people would love to believe that they are unique and the unique little snowflakes falling in the sky. Maybe.
Yeah.
But humans, if you study them long enough, whether you're a marketer or whether it's a deaf person, everybody behaves on a pattern. And it's very predictable way of living. Most conversations when I was growing up is so predictable. Very few people want to break patterns or social norms. So once you understand context, once you understand how people respond to their environment, it's quite predictable. I'm not saying I'm a savant, like Rain Man, but I am saying that the more you understand it, the easier it is to fill in the words. And so I went through K through 12 without a sign language interpreter, without a note taker. My parents were just like,
wow.
We don't want him to be special. Which is stupid, but they did not want me to be that. They wanted me to be as normal as possible, so they pushed away all the what I thought would be great help. But so I survived K-12. I went to a 4-year college, University of Denver. I got my master's degree. All of that was because I learned how to survive and understand people with all the information. So getting to the point here, it helped me. Like I said, you asked me about prompting. And so when I go interview for the information I need, I know what questions to ask. I know how to figure out what makes humans respond to stimuli, what language we need to be using to get them. Part of being deaf is keeping the conversation predictable. Because if I say, for example, we met, I say, How I think you're from Minnesota, right?
I am originally, yep.
I was saying, so are you from a Swedish, Norwegian background? And you know, yeah, I already know what you're going to say because I've studied enough. I've never been to Minnesota and I know enough to control the conversation by asking you a very specific question. And also looking at your body type. Control the conversation by acting very, or if I want you to do something, I can say certain things to get you to do something that doesn't make you feel bad. So I learned all of that just to survive. So the best way for me to survive is to be able to control the conversation. And the only way I can control the conversation to know more about you than you probably know about yourself. So that sounds very big ego. But it's the only way I could survive K through 12. There's no other way. So as a marketer, I had the very same thing. Doesn't mean I'm the best marketer on the block. It does not mean I'm God tier. It just means I'm able to do unique things with marketing.
Absolutely. I love that so much. It's fascinating. I do remember that post now that you mention it. And I wasn't even thinking about it when I wrote this question, but it was such a great answer to this question. And I particularly something that stood out to you is as part of being deaf is it benefits you to control the conversation. And literally that sounds like a great definition of just marketing to me, is controlling the conversation around your brand, around your product, around
That's exactly it.
So just absolutely fascinating. Continuing down this track, you've also mentioned that AI helps level the playing field for you as a deaf person. Can you share maybe some examples of how AI tools now assist you in your work and your daily communication, whereas that may have been more difficult before AI?
Yeah, absolutely. So 13 years ago, I couldn't get on a sales call. No tech out there to get on a sales call. Yeah, if you don't know what it is, maybe your audience knows what it is. Those things called like the relay services. Well, you had a special device. There was an operator on the line. Talk about awkward. Talk, you know, and she wouldn't hear, she would interpret what you're saying. Type it back to me. It'll come across my screen.
Wow.
It's the worst sales call you can ever get out. So definitely not doing that. So I had to learn to sell products through DM, through cold email. So I've never hopped on a single sales call until COVID hit.
Wow.
And Google Meets started captioning. I didn't know about it. A friend of mine said, hey, you should talk to your client. I'm like, I can't do that. No, you turn on the caption. That's AI. I don't think people understand that the caption on Google Meet 5 years ago, that is the single most powerful AI you're ever going to find. It can understand accent. It can understand language. It can understand different modalities of expression and can turn and flip it into captioning on the screen. That week that I discovered Google Meet was the day I increased my prices.
Wow. Fascinating.
Because sales is sales. If you're going to go high ticket, they're going to want a conversation with you. You're going to have to find the objection, defend the objection. You're never going to be able to go from a cold email to somebody transferring $10,000 to your bank account. That's not how it works. You have to go low ticket and go lower than the market. And do it up volume. That's how I did it for years. So I would work a lot for really low ticket prices because it's easier to close. We never had to meet. Now, 5 years ago, I just raised my prices. It was like, forget that, man. I'm going up market, bro. And then that opened up a whole new world for me. Then I had to learn sales. Sure. I had to learn how to sell on a call. I had to learn to... I know you're going to ask, listen for the objection. I had to learn all of that. And then I started coaching. So first time in my life, I can do done-for-you services or coaching services or both. Prices go up. LTV is amazing. A little bit along the line, the note-takers started popping up. All this great stuff. Now I can take information and read the transcripts and find how to improve my sales call even better, et cetera. And then fast forward last year, now I can take that, move it to ChatGPT, turn it to a prompt for Claude turns it into content. It's just this never ending treasure hole for me. So whenever I have a bad moment, I have to remind myself 5 years ago, I was stuck in email, just emailing back and forth, almost similar to Fiverr. I was never on Fiverr, but same prices, I was so happy to leave that behind. But when you move up market, it's a different set of problems. But I have to remind myself, it's just a different, better problem. But you're never going to outrun problems. It's just, they get bigger and better. You make more money. The bigger the problems you solve. So that's the best way. It's just COVID. Everybody went on Google Meet or Zoom or Teams. And I just took full advantage of that. And the note takers came in the room. And then different things came into the room that just made communication, recall, and understanding other people. Even right now. We're on Descript, just so everybody knows. I've never been on Descript. So I had to go to Google and turn on the live caption.
I see.
Go down to accessibility, turn on live caption, so any sound coming on the screen will have a live caption. So that's how you and I are able to talk. I see.
Well, first of all, it didn't even occur to me that Descript might throw a little wrench in your workflow. So apologies for that.
That's what I mean. It's so fluid now. As a deaf person, the one thing I always hate is making my deafness your problem. So I used to hate back in the day, hey, can you turn on the closed caption on the TV? I just absolutely hated it. I mean, I'm not ashamed. Just, it makes everybody awkward. I just rather not deal with it. I don't want you to know I had captions on the screen. I would prefer full inclusion. You should not know that I had captions on my screen. That's the best scenario for the both of us, in my opinion.
That's so cool. And I didn't. And so it's really an amazing time that we're living in.